Going to talk to us today about the people and faces and stories of development. Phil's a relationship manager for World Vision, hence the strong World Vision focus that we've had in the last 2 weeks. Over on the table over there, there's some sponsored kids. If you would like to look at those to pick up for your family, that would be great, and someone will be with you with the table at the end of the service. So welcome, Phil. Thanks for coming and sharing with us, and we look forward to hearing what you've got to say today.
Very much. Honestly, there's no need for loud, rapturous applause. Thank you. Thank you. Church that takes a hint is a good church indeed. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. I sort of had a sense that I might be somewhat speaking with the converted, which is good in a church, isn't it? But I do appreciate very much, Liz, your leading this morning, and that thought about no greater love has anyone than he lays down his life for a friend, and for Malcolm for that validation, wherever Malcolm is. It's also very exciting to be speaking to a church whose latest member is the great-grandson of my doctor when I was growing up in Ashburton, Dr. Lawrence Sanson. Obviously they share names, and I think each generation in between shares that name. So there you go. Cannot relate Rory to the sausage dog, but thank you all the same. So I am a born in Christchurch. Don't ask me which school I went to. I refuse to answer. But I actually grew up in Ashburton and went to the mighty Ashburton College. Thank you for that, Murray. Fine acknowledgement. And thereafter, I studied agricultural science at Lincoln and worked as a farm advisor here in New Zealand, and in fact worked with Jeremy's father in Greymouth, we just worked out, for a number of months. And then I worked in Tanzania a little bit in similar roles, in New Zealand volunteer, and then more recently more commercial roles here in New Zealand in the agricultural scene, and more recently with World Vision for the last 3.5 years. And it's an interesting beast being a fundraiser, and relax, I'm not really even going to attempt to fundraise today, but there are children there to be sponsored if you'd like to, don't you worry about that. But I was intrigued, Malcolm, in your comments about giving not just to a Christian organisation, etc., because I think one of the darkest days I had in my World Vision history was when a lovely Christian family rang up our call centre and cancelled their sponsored child because they'd found out that World Vision works with Muslims. And I just thought, how sad are we in the church that we would be concerned that a Christian organisation was working with Muslims? Well, I've got no idea how else the Muslim people are going to hear about Jesus if we ignore them and hate them. And I thought the Revolution t-shirt this morning with love is so much the greater way to be addressing things. So thank you for all that's happened before. I'm turned on, I can see a light, but I'm not going forward. Where should I aim this puppy?
No, you've gone too far.
Oh, have I? Try there. I went too far. It's often what my wife says, but we won't go into the context of that. Luke 6. Includes the Beatitudes. Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. So I guess what I want to share about today is I'm going to go a little bit into World Vision and a little bit of what we do and a little bit of the ethos behind our development, which I think is really amazing. Try and unpack a little bit of the journey that I'm going on. So it's all about me, unfortunately, for you guys. But that's where we're at. So there is a great need for the work that World Vision does. I'm not going to go into the gory details or something, but we are making incredible progress also internationally. I suspect domestically we're probably struggling in some ways when it comes to poverty. But just to give you a bit of a sense of what World Vision does, and hopefully you can't read that too much, or else you spend your time reading it not listening to me, and if you haven't noticed, it's all about me this morning, but World Vision internationally raises something like $3.5 billion New Zealand dollars, of which World Vision New Zealand is a mere sort of 75 million. I know it's embarrassing, isn't it? And there's two main halves to what we do. There's disaster relief, and in the 2016 year that one's about, we responded to 130 disasters, and needless to say, there's a few on as we speak that we're responding to. And then the other side is the development side, which is what sort of this morning's been more about. And thank you for your displays as concerns child sponsorship. And a lot of what we do as development is funded through child sponsorship. And as the previous speakers have indicated, in the World Vision model, and it's not the same for all models, in fact, we visited a sponsored child in Tanzania, where both my wife and I had worked in our single years. And it was a really neat time, and we had our 9-year-old son, who's now 21 with us, and met our sponsored child, who couldn't speak a word of English, needless to say, and our son couldn't speak a word of Swahili, but bawled his eyes out, you know, after spending that sort of half a day together. But in thinking about it in hindsight, we went into his home, and he was in this lovely blue school uniform with his grey socks pulled up and black shoes on, but all his siblings were still in their rags, and their parents were getting no agricultural training or anything whatsoever. And that's, as Malcolm and people have indicated in that video, which I loved and I'd never seen before, the World Vision video, but the child sponsorship money that you send simply goes into a pot, because we think every child should be vaccinated, every child should, you know, be able to attend school, have clean, fresh drinking water, and all parents who are the greatest carers for children, you know, should have the agricultural training and opportunities for economic development, etc. So our mission in World Vision is based on John 10:10. I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. And that would make sense for a World Vision person to be speaking about that internationally, but I think what I want to go to more today is what is our attitude here in the West, so that we can also understand what life in the full is. And therein is our mission statement: our vision for every child, life in all its fullness, our prayer for every heart, the will to make it so. So on a really big scale, some of the stuff that World Vision does can only be seen by satellite photos to get its context. And that photo is in Niger, in the Sahel, which is that area just below the Sahara. And of course, we all know that the Sahara is encroaching, and often that's because of man's activity. But over that 30-year period, the black dots are the increase in number of trees from left to right. And these trees typically are lying redundant with a beautiful root system under the ground, and may just appear as a little wee green shoot of a shrub. But goats, etc., that are free ranging will just, you know, snip that off and they will never flourish. But by tethering your goats and sheep and whatever other animals you have, and controlling your children and maybe putting fences around some of them, etc., then there's just such a beautiful change that occurs by allowing those trees to grow, which means wood for firewood, which is often women's work, building materials for houses, foliage for your animals to feed on, maybe fruit for humans, holding that soil strongly, and also if they're leguminous trees, you know, putting nitrogen and improving the fertility of the soil. So that's a reasonably grand scale. There's another picture of something similar. On a grand scale, World Vision is now digging so many wells that we're providing clean, fresh water to somebody new somewhere in the world every 10 seconds. Now, that's not a constant flow. That's quite episodic, and so it might be 1,000 this day and 100 the next day, or whatever it might be. But, in fact, some of the biggest charities in the world, one known as Water Charity in America, which does a huge amount of fundraising and is an amazing organisation, they select World Vision to do that work because we simply just do it so well. And one of the amazing things is about it is we're not only, says he talking about himself again, or at least the company he represents, are very good at digging the wells, but we've learned over the years that if you don't train people well before the well is built, then in fact the well can often fall into disrepair. And research from independent universities shows that World Vision wells will last something like 40 years, and that's because we set up a committee to manage it. And as we'll get on to, and has sort of been shown already by the video, we try to only be in a community for 15 years, so we need that community to be saving money over that time, so in 40 years' time they can build another well, because we will be long gone at that time. On a sort of a more softer and more delightful level, and one of the area development programs in Malawi called Lapiri. We have been doing some work to help young ladies remain in school. So as young ladies start menstruating, what tends to happen is often they have to skip that week of school, and then when they come back to school, they find that they are struggling to catch up, and so there's like a lag phase of where you catch up to where you were, and then you catch up, and often it's that time again, and you have to skip another week. And so some really beautiful, simple technology in this program is that we've been working with some of the mothers and providing sewing machines, etc., and they make just these really simple pads that are reusable that can allow the girls to remain clean and be able to attend school very easily and not miss out on what's going on an educational level. And that's you know, literally helping thousands of young ladies keep in school in Malawi. And as likewise that video indicated, the learnings we get from projects like that we then share with the other programs we're doing internationally. So Alex Sneary last week talked a little bit about our philosophy of development, and I'm at risk of repeating myself. The development is based around a 15-year program. So we identify an area in the country that is particularly needing and poor, and then we will target that area, and it may be 30,000 to 50,000 to 60,000 people in that community. And then we come in and we just say, Lord, where are you moving in this community? It's exactly like Liz was saying today. We are not so incredibly arrogant that we think we're bringing Jesus to the community. We know Jesus is there. He loves us all so much. And we just say, how can we partner with you in this community? And this is the learning I think that sometimes, I think that for me, and as I said, I'm preaching to myself this morning, this is really what I need to be learning here in Christchurch, New Zealand, etc. as well. So we come in, we see who are the leaders, who do we need to be supporting, and we find there's a pastor called Peter, and there's a doctor called Miriam, and there's a vet called Robert, and I'm struggling. There's an engineer called Chris, and there's a mayor called Leanne, and there's a ophthalmologist called Malcolm. It's a doctor that works with eyes anyway. So we sit down with these people and the leaders of the community, and we'll make sure that's equally shared with male and female. And we say, hey, you know, what do you see as the priorities for this, your community? And we'll be thinking, dang, this community needs a primary school. It's crazy. These kids aren't going to school. And so we'll sit down with our own biases, of course, and then the community will say, actually, no, that's not the priority. What we need is a well, because our girls are spending 6 hours a day collecting water in the dry season. So unless we have a well, we can never get them to go to school anyway. And so maybe the well becomes the first priority. But when the school comes along, then it's all about the community building the school. It's not about World Vision saying, hey, let's stick it out there on the playground. Let's build it nice facing north or wherever. And dedicating it to the community. It's very much about the community making the bricks, building whatever they can, and then maybe World Vision paying for the corrugated iron or something like that, so that it actually is the community school and they're running it as their own. One of the things we are constantly being challenged about is growing that relationship and improving it on what Malcolm was describing. And technology will obviously help a lot in this. But one of the last things we want to do is have a single child sitting there and often not smiling, and who knows why they won't smile, but often they won't. And in fact, we get this patronising, condescending attitude to the great white hope saving the poor, humble native. And in fact, it shouldn't be like that at all. It's so much we need to be learning from each other. We need to be growing together. And in fact, there's a really interesting article in the latest Baptist, possibly God's favourite magazine, and I see you have a copy over there, that Sarah Rice, one of the pastors of my church, I'm a part of Papua Nui Baptist, has written about our efforts to really change the way we portray the communities we work with, because if we're showing pictures of industrious adults working very hard and supporting their children, how different do we respond to that as opposed to this one single child that, you know, has taken a good photo or not. And so I think child sponsorship's really neat, but we need to be pen pals, not you know, the great white hope and that attitude. In fact, I was a part of a trip to Malawi with the church from Wellington recently that supports, in fact, it was that Project Lapiri that I mentioned just before. And rather than calling it a short-term missions trip, what we decided to call, because the missions trip sort of implies that we need to go there and do something and make a difference or something, rather than a vision trip, which is what we called it, because we actually want to go and learn from this community and learn about their wealth, what are the areas of real strength that they can teach us about, as opposed to, you know, us giving to them. And it reminds me of one of my colleagues, a guy by the name of Chris Jupp, who sort of got involved with World Vision by seeing that as a schoolboy at Wellington College, he could get time off school by helping lead the famine. So great motivations, needless to say. And through that, he's come to know the Lord and is just a full-on Christian man that works with us in the sort of the youth scene. So anyway, he, as a young man, was in Tanzania meeting with other young people, and they were having this discussion, and the young people from Tanzania, through a translator, said, "Chris, you know, what's the AIDS epidemic like in New Zealand?" And he just sort of, you know, shrugged his shoulders and he said, "You know, it's simply not an epidemic. You know, we have AIDS. I don't know anyone with AIDS. But, you know, in our country, there are people that suffer from that disease. But it's just, it's not something that we, you know, wrestle with." He said, what I wrestle with is teen suicide. He said, "What's teen suicide like in Tanzania?" And there was quite a bit of Swahili going on for a wee while, and then they came back and said, "Sorry, we don't know what you mean by teen suicide." And it's through that that he started realizing, wow, this community has so much. Their relationship with the Lord is so rich and so real that, you know, I can learn so much from these guys, and we as a community can learn so much from this community. And it's actually in this development context that I guess the key part of what I want to share now and the challenges that I'm facing personally, and it's this term incarnational living. And we are very excited as World Vision to be hosting a guy by the name of Dr. Jayakumar Christian over the next few days here in New Zealand. And Jayakumar has done his PhD at Fuller and studied poverty and social community development, etc., over many years, and has led a lot of work by World Vision in completely non-Christian communities and seen whole communities come to faith. So just that beautiful combination of doing development, which I think we're called to do, as Malcolm referred to, but so much more exciting when you see people coming to faith and its development in the body, soul and spirit. And so the challenge that is expressed, I think, is encapsulated by this from Gandhi. When people asked him if he was a Christian, he would often reply, "Ask the poor and they will tell you who the Christians are." And so for me, I think sitting in a nice office here in my middle class Christchurch, I can think that's so true of our work internationally. But actually more and more I'm thinking, well, how does that apply to me here in Christchurch? Because I think for me, one of the key things happening in this election is what are we doing about the poverty in this country. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? And rather than a superiority, inferiority, then 2 Corinthians 8 talks about an equivalency in relationship. Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. The goal is equality. As it is written, the one who has gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Or in Isaiah 58, looking at worship and us as a church, I tell you what it really means to worship the Lord. Remove the chains of prisoners who are chained unjustly. Free those who are abused. Share your food with everyone who is hungry. Share your home with the poor and homeless. Give clothes to those in need. And don't turn away your relatives. It reminds me of Ents Watt. Do many of you know Ents Watt, one of the pastors or associate pastors at Southwest Baptist, now based in Kolkata? He represented the church a number of years ago and went to one of the schools in Addington and sat down with this amazing woman who was the principal of the school and just said, look, we as a church just really want to thank you for the amazing job that you are doing in the school and in our community, and we just want to pass that on and just let you know that we really want to support you. And her response wasn't just complete gratitude. She in fact said, you don't think that's true, and I don't believe you for a minute. So he inquired a little bit, and he said, and she responded by saying, if you meant that, maybe one child from your whole church would attend the school. And that for him was just a huge factor in him realizing, you know, how do we work in this community of Christchurch, and how do we as a church really relate to those who are poor in our midst. So what might we do to consider the ways that we might build relationship with the poor? Number one, get personally involved with people in need in your community. And for some of us, that may mean actually we need to shift communities. Seek transformation, but in a mutual way, in yourself and others. Be open to what God is doing. It's better and bigger than your plan. Grapple with the root causes of poverty. There are no easy answers, but love always bears fruit. The love revolution, as Chris was wearing. Use your networks and opportunities to share what you learn and experience. Too often our church is a silent spectator to poverty. And often the church is very vocal on the sins of the bedroom, but at the moment there's 65 million refugees around the world. If you put them together in one country, it would be the 21st biggest country, and it represents a significant, well, I think, is it 1% of the world's population? But yet I find the church strangely quiet on that topic. So when you're considering your vote, maybe consider that one also. And then finally, remember you are the steward, not the owner of your gifts, talents, and assets. Don't waste time with small goals and challenges. So I've got to tell you, I don't really understand this scripture or the Beatitudes. I'm not a theologian. But blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. I guess the reason I don't understand it is probably because I don't want to understand it. But how does that relate to somebody who really does want to know life in all its fullness, as I'm sure we all do? Well, the good news is there's another version of the Beatitudes in Matthew, and it's slightly softer, so this is the one that we'll go with, I'm sure. Blessed are you who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. So a subtle difference, but what is it to be poor in spirit? Well, Tim Keller says, or recommends, three steps. They are: know the poor, become poor in spirit, and love the poor. And he doesn't recommend that we all need to become materially poor. He doesn't recommend that we all need to become materially rich. But he does strongly recommend, as the Bible does, that we all need to become contented. And out of that contentedness comes radical generosity. Because I don't know about you, but I certainly struggle with jealousy and envy. And I struggle to achieve contentedness. And what I've noticed is whenever I compare myself, I always compare myself with someone better. So if it's intelligence, then, you know, I might compare myself with Miriam, for example, rather than Chris. Sorry. or if it's wealth, then I also always compare myself to somebody wealthier. If it's muscles, I compare myself with somebody that's got bigger muscles, etc. But oh, for that ability to actually be contented and actually be thankful for the way I am, the way the Lord has gifted me, and for my small contribution of what I might be able to do in the world. So in summary, I want to tell you about a guy by the name of David Ross, who pastors a little C3 church. Probably shouldn't say little, I don't even know what size it is, in Invercargill. And I just met him in the last month, and I was giving him the spiel, telling them how amazing World Vision was. Well, not really. I just sort of was asking a bit about himself. And so I said, what was your background before you started pastoring a church, which he planted 8 years ago? And he said, well, I was a dairy farmer in Tapanui. Everyone loves Tapanui. He had 500 cows, and him and his wife were doing very well. But the Lord spoke to him very clearly and said to him, whose kingdom are you building? Your kingdom or my kingdom? So Island Baptist, Miriam requested a challenge. And so that's my challenge to me today, and I wonder if you want to share in it, is what am I building? Am I building my kingdom, or am I building God's kingdom? So I think that's 20 minutes or something fairly close. And I was told 20 minutes and 10 minutes for questions. I'm sure that was so complete that there's absolutely no need for a question whatsoever. But should I have missed something, please feel very free to ask a question if you would like to. Or after a difficult pause and silence, I will then sit down and hand back to Rory. Yeah.
And that doesn't happen, but haven't we actually seen it by educating children and we actually advance communities, or yep. Are we too greedy and the rich, so we sort of just keep them pushed down?
I think there is an aspect to what you're saying I believe is completely true, and that's what I'm particularly looking forward to quizzing this guy Jay Akuma Christian about, is the actual causes of poverty and spending some time on that. I won't try and answer that, but I believe it's true. I guess two quick thoughts. One thought is probably the most significant thing you can do to improve development in a community is educate the girls. And there's far more to our development than just that, and of course you don't want to do that just in isolation. The other thing is that whole 15-year program that we've referred to as Concerns Area Development came out of World Vision New Zealand. You'll be proud to know we punch above our weight. And it was in Central America in a project that we were doing there that we decided to wean ourselves and leave. And it's a bit like when your kids are at the age of leaving home, which some of mine are. It's that whole thing of leaving and cleaving and getting that right. So anyway, after 15 years, we decided, and we'd monitored that, we'd seen this growth over the 15 years. We decided to leave them completely alone for 5 years and then... it was about 2 years ago that Seth Lalou, some of you would know, and one of the other ladies from our organisation went and visited that community. And so we thought we had got them to there, whatever that means, but that's a positive graph on the X and Y axis if you can't tell what I'm thinking. We wondered if, the community had flattened off or it had dropped off, etc. In fact, there was a point of inflection and it had gone far better than we had anticipated over those next 5 years. So... I believe we make a huge difference, and it's very long-lasting, and if there is education, etc., carrying on, then that makes a huge difference. There's so much more. Last time I was here, and I'm sure you remember it very clearly, it's almost as if I was here yesterday, one of the big things we've worked on is attitudes between male and female. Another one is the church's attitude towards AIDS, because in places like Uganda, it was like, AIDS is a demonic thing. Why would we welcome them into the church? But we're able to sit down with the church leaders, go through scripture, go through their culture, go through biology, and the church just responded hugely. So I'll use a term, take this, very glibly. Those hideous orphanages that the Americans love to build are, in fact, now are becoming less and less needed because the community is saying, I'm going to support this brother who... is able to support some children and this one here because these children have lost their parents, etc. And really the whole community taking on the poor exactly as the scriptures would say. I'm starting to waffle and I wonder if I've anything like answered your question, but I'll stop now and look intelligent in the hope that I have.
Thank you.
Someone else might have a better answer for that, incidentally.
So, Phil, you sounds like you've got some kind of evidence-based program going on. Can you tell us where all that evidence comes from and who decides what kind of program is going to work, and how do you make sure that you keep on that pathway?
One of the best secrets of World Vision is where your money goes. So we work very hard on that 80-20 thing. So 20% of the money we raise here in New Zealand stays to feed fat cats like me and goes on administration, etc. And then so 80% goes to the field. That's the really simple question. What I like to challenge people who ask that question is, how good is the money that goes to the field? That's not so easy to understand. But I looked at something during the week, and I think there was an organisation in Ethiopia that said, rather than sending missionaries, if you gave us X thousand dollars a month, it was a tiny amount, we could reach every village in Ethiopia with missionaries. By using local staff that are well trained, typically because of the work the missionaries have done over the years, we can make just absolutely amazing differences. So we use local staff, but 6% of the money that goes to World Vision actually goes to World Vision International, and they oversee the work we do. And so by learning, you know, like that program that we were talking about earlier, we learn those results and then implement them in all our other programs. And it's a real fine balance of being led by the Lord in every single project, but also knowing what's right and how it works and implementing that. Now, of course, there is weaknesses with that. When I was in Tanzania, I was working in a United Nations project in agriculture, and I'd learnt something that worked really well in rice paddy agriculture in Asia. They were implementing it in dairy cattle agriculture in Tanzania, and it didn't work, you know. But I think that's one of the great things about World Vision, is that we are prepared to learn from our mistakes, and I'm sure you're aware we make plenty of them, but if we are learning and implementing that right throughout our programs, then that makes a huge difference. So I haven't actually talked about the specifics, but what I'm saying is there's an overarching group that monitors all our projects to ensure that we're doing those efficiently.
So is there best practice that every organisation is, you know, like TF Fund and UNICEF and all those, is there a kind of best practice that everybody's working towards, or a body of research?
There is standards as concerns our attitude to development, and I think thereafter the really good stuff just gets flogged by everyone. And I think especially in disaster relief, as much as we compete a lot at the New Zealand level to fundraise, we actually work very well with others and flog the good ideas continually. And I think that's a pretty healthy attitude.
Thank you so much, Phil. That was awesome.
Can I say thank you?
You can say thank you.
Island Baptist, I'd just like to say thank you very much. It's been neat to be with you for 2 weeks. And I acknowledge that there is incredible support for us as an organisation and other organisations in this room. We do appreciate it very much. And I likewise very much appreciate the chance to speak. Thank you, Liz.
My pleasure. Well, I've seen a lot of the... I've been sitting here in the front row, and I've seen... A